You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. This week's rugby story is that of a Yorkshireman who started his journey with Thornhill Trojans, but majority of his junior career was with Newsome Panthers. He nicely developed his overall skill set as he grew up and managed to represent his area, county and was selected internationally. This got him noticed by a boyhood club, Huddersfield Giants, and he never looked back. His position changed a couple of times, but he never looked out of place in doing so. He represented Jamaica at the latest World Cup and ranks it in as an amazing experience. He now plies his trade for Bradford Bulls and is amongst the senior players looking to pass on his experience and knowledge to the youngsters. Ladies and gents, Mr. Michael Lawrence.
Follow, like, share, subscribe and endorse us via Facebook, Trot the Egging, Twitter, @TrotTheEgging/@JohnHeth, Instagram, @trot_d_egg_in, YouTube, Trot the Egging, LinkedIn, John Hetherington, and Spotify, Trot the Egging.
So, Mike, how have you been, mate? Okay?
Good, yeah. All good, thanks. Keeping well, thank you.
How's the new environment treating you?
Yeah, it's good. Obviously, a massive change for myself after obviously being at Huddersfield for 16 years, pretty much. Probably longer if you count like the scholarship and things like that. So yeah, going into the part-time environment is a bit of a change, but no, getting used to it now and really enjoying my time at Bradford.
Good man, we'll talk about that later on. We've got a lot to get through, haven't we, mate? So before we get stuck into your rugby story, mate, where was home for you and who lived at home with you?
So home for me has changed a few times, to be fair. I was born in Huddersfield, and I lived in Dalton with my mum and my dad, my older sister and younger brother. And then when they divorced when I was about 5 years old, we moved to Thornhill in Dewsbury. Lived there for a couple of years. That's when I was first introduced to the game of rugby league. And then we moved back when I was seven and moved to Newsome. And I lived in Newsome from the age of seven till 18. So kind of class myself as from and raised in Newsham, and that was my where I spent most of my time playing my amateur rugby.
Right, mate, and at such a young age, if you're all right with me talking about it, how did you cope with the change in life? Was it just water off a duck's back because a kid's being a kid, hopefully, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Like I said, it was pretty much all I've ever known, really, my mum and dad growing up apart, really. So, yeah, my mum. We were with my mum pretty much from when I was 5 years old, and it was just a normal for me. Still get on fine, really, to be fair. But at that time, at 5 years old, you don't really know what's going on in their business. It's what it is.
Yeah, that's the beauty, mate, isn't it? Of being a kid, everything's good in it as far as you know.
Yeah, pretty much. You just took it in a stride at that age.
Yeah, and so is that where the competitiveness comes from, mate? Having a busy household.
Definitely. I'm very, very competitive.
First up, best dressed.
Yeah, very, very competitive. Yeah, I remember playing board games and stuff like Snakes and Ladders, and yeah, it'd end in tears if I didn't win. So, yeah, I was very, very competitive from a young age.
Someone's telling me you were always the banker, mate.
Oh, pretty much, mate. Luckily, if I didn't win, no one was playing.
So you mentioned there at Thornhill is when rugby league come into your life, mate. So how was that brought about and where was that club at?
So basically when we moved to Thornhill, when my dad split up, we moved to the estate and our house backed onto the rugby field. But we had, my mum had no idea about rugby league or any kind of sport. But one day we were around at the next door neighbours just after school playing with their kids that were of similar age. And obviously there were some kids training in the backfield, obviously for Thornhill Trojans at the time. And my mum just asked the neighbour, what was that? What's the sport? What are those kids doing out there every Tuesday and Thursday night? And she went, oh, it's rugby league. You should take your Michael over. They'll have a team at his age, an under sevens team. You should take him over. So yeah, my mum dragged me over one night. The coach, a guy called James, actually bought me my first pair of boots because my mum didn't know what they were. We didn't have much money growing up, to be fair. So he bought me my first pair of boots so I could join in. And I absolutely loved it. I loved it because I could get at that time. They didn't play through the summer, I played through the winter, as you remember back in the amateur days.
So yeah.
I could get muddy and not get in trouble. So I used to love the fact that I could roll about in the mud, slide in the mud, not get in trouble. And then on a Sunday after the games, they'd give us hot dogs after every game, and I loved it. Loved it. that was the main thing. That's how the passion started, really, and then it kicked on from there.
Right, mate. And do you remember much about them early days, how the pitches were and how many were playing? And I don't know if you'll remember, but we used to have the cards.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember going, lining up before a game and getting your card shown. Yeah. And if the kid were a bit taller than everyone else, all parents would be kicking off saying, check his card. Yeah. Check the date on that card, and we used to have little plastic mini posts that we used to play with and stuff like that. And I think it must have been about 7 or 9 aside that you used to play. And your coach used to stand behind you and make sure everyone got a carry and things like that. So I do have some flashbacks of those early days first playing the game. But one thing I knew is that I loved rugby league at that stage. And when it did come to moving to Huddersfield, we weren't in 4-0 for a long time. Because my older sister, she didn't settle in high school. She just started year 7 and didn't really settle. So my mum wanted to move back home because all the rest of my family were from Huddersfield, grandparents, my aunties, uncles, all from Huddersfield. So we moved back to Huddersfield then when I was 17-year-old. And sorry, when I was 7-year-old. And the first thing I wanted to do was, when I joined the school, the first question my mum asked was, what was the local rugby team? Because she knew I loved it from that one season at Thornhill. I had a really good junior school teacher called Miss Rogers, and she pointed me in the direction of Ewes and Panthers.
Yeah, right. And were they well established, mate?
Yeah, so Newsham was probably the biggest junior club in Huddersfield at the time. They had teams at all age groups, to be fair. And I joined the under-9s team when I was about 7 years old. I always played a year up all the way through till, obviously, 16-year-old when I played my final season. So I always played a year up.
They're still checking your cards the year up.
So I always played a year up. And to be fair, my first coach was a guy called Bert Mackay. He just knew I had that passion for rugby league. He was one of the kids' dads, as you normally get pretty much at that age. And he just loved rugby league, to be fair. And he coached me till I was 13. To be fair, when his son packed in, when it normally gets to teenagers, as you know, lads start to get a bit bigger and it gets a bit tougher, and it's not for everyone at that age. And when his son decided to pack in, he left. And up until that point, I was okay. I was obviously consistent. I loved the game. I played on the wing and the centre, but didn't really get that much involved in the game. Didn't really have coach spend much one-on-one time with me. His focus was more on his own son and a few other players within the team. But I loved it, and I turned up to training every week and was very consistent. But when I was 13, 14, that's when it all really changed for me.
Yeah, and that's when, like you said, it gets a bit serious then, Michael, doesn't it? It's not just about playing anymore, is it? It changes.
Yeah, definitely. It changed because, obviously, Bert Mackay left and Darren Fleury, I don't know if you remember him. Yep, so obviously played for Great Britain, England, Leeds Rhinos, captain Huddersfield. He took over because we were a very good team. We were unbeaten for like 3 years before that. So he decided to take over with his good mate, a guy called Adrian Brooke. Then he took a real shining to me straight away, to be fair. And he moved my position from centre to standoff. And that off-season through the summer, had loads of sessions with him. I learned how to pass, kick, taught me the real detail of the game, how to understand it, how people play at like an academy and a professional level, because he'd been there himself.
Yeah.
And that year, my game personally just really went from strength to strength. I went from scraping into playing for Kirklees to that year I played for England and I earned my scholarship. So I played for Kirklees, Yorkshire, if you remember the camps, the regional camps. So I went through that process, the regional camp, played for Yorkshire, went to national camp, got through national camp and played for England against Wales and earned a scholarship at Huddersfield when I was 14.
So you had all the posh pubic stuff, did you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it was a really good year for myself. And it was at that stage where I realised I'm actually okay at this and I could actually make something out of it if I really put my head down.
Yeah, so just for listeners that and viewers that might not understand the levels you've gone through there within, I'd say probably 18 months, isn't it, when Darren takes over.
Yeah.
You've hit like the standard levels really fast, haven't you? So you've gone real amateur to amateur to virtually semi-pro level.
Pretty
within
much.
18 months, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty much. That was it. It just happened really quick overnight. Yeah, very, very quick.
Right. So did you play any town team?
Yes. So
when played, we were 11-ish, did you play anything like that?
Yeah, I played for Kirklees service area. So, used to played for Kirklees service area. And we'd play, obviously, against all the other service areas. So, Pontefract. You play against South Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, Leeds, all the different Bradford service area, all the different councils as it was at that time.
Yeah,
that's how it was kind of structured.
And right, and did you play the year above Mike?
No, I played at my own age group. So anytime it came to representative rugby, I always went back down to my own age group, which I kind of found to my advantage because I was used to playing against bigger lads. So when I was playing against lads my own age, I always felt like I was a little bit stronger and it felt a bit easier to tackle these guys. And yeah, it worked well for me when it came to representative rugby.
Yeah, it's not being big-headed, so I'll ask you to be honest, mate. Was it a bit easy? Because you're playing week in, week out with bigger lads.
It wasn't easy, but the physicality was easier. Yeah. Definitely the physicality. Yeah. You didn't get as banged around as a lot because... I was always tall, but I didn't have as much size as I do now. I didn't fill out until I got to the academy because back then there was no such thing as weights in amateur rugby. We never really did strength training or anything like that. So yeah, I was pretty slim until I got to the academy.
Right, mate. And then the transition into high school, does rugby help with that for you, mate? Do you find?
Yeah, massively, massively. Just for a social group really more than anything else. So I feel like when I first moved to Newsham, going into the Newsham Panthers rugby team, I already had a group of mates before school had even started because of the team. So going to the school, you already know people in your year and the years above and pretty much all the way through the school because they see you around the club. So no, it really helps from that aspect, to be fair. And yeah, being involved in a team squad, but I think it's massive. It's just massive for all people. Just keeps them out of trouble, keeps you focused. And yeah, I couldn't recommend it highly enough, to be honest.
Yeah, and what was the standard of the school rugby like compared to club rugby, mate?
Poor. Yeah, poor. Yeah. To be fair. Wasn't great, but to be fair, at Newsham High School, we had pretty much, I reckon, half the team was the same guys that played for Newsham Panthers. So we was all right, to be fair. But then it was a drastic drop off because there wasn't an out-and-out rugby PE teacher at the school. There was a fair few football, cricket, things like that. But we kind of organised it ourselves because they realised there was a few rugby lads at the school. They was like, oh, we might as well have a team. So we kind of just organised it and coached it ourselves and roped in whoever we could to hop on the wing and have a game, pretty much. To get a team
I'm going to say, you got your strikers on the wing and your centre-backs at
prop. Pretty much. Someone we'd chuck them on there.
And did you play both courts at school, mate? Or?
We played one game of rugby union and, yeah, it was carnage, to be honest. It didn't go well. So, no, we stuck to league, but I remember we entered in the Yorkshire Cup in rugby union and bowed out pretty quickly.
Yeah, a bit of an eye opener. Because when you've grew up playing rugby league, like we have, it's a drastic change as a kid, isn't it? It's all the little intricacies are really big.
Yeah, massively. I think we just kept penalty after penalty away because we had no idea what we were doing, to be honest. So,
going back 10 and they're getting a free run at you and that.
that's it. Yeah, it was very strange. We couldn't understand how we were stripping the ball when we'd been tackled and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was strange.
No, when did your talent get noticed outside the newsroom? So I know obviously Darren's seen something in you.
Yeah.
Shift the position.
Yeah.
So before we move on to people spotting you, really, with Darren giving you that little glimpse of professional environment,
yeah,
you must have had the pivot skills in you without really knowing, mate, wasn't you, to be able to shift in field?
Definitely. That's where I just believe, obviously, that's when I realised how important coaches were, looking back now, and how important amateur coaches are in investing the time in everybody equally and developing everyone's skills, because you don't actually know what every individual can do. Because I don't feel like I had that at the early stages, to be fair. Obviously, there was the encouragement to participate and be involved, but the actual developing each individual's skills and seeing what they can do and making sure they fulfill their potential, that didn't really happen until Darren came along. And as I say, that it had been 2004, that 2004 season, when it started to go from stride to stride, that's when the attention really did come along. Pretty much, I'd played for the as I say, service area or inter-town team from 11 to 14, so three years without being really noticed. And then that year that I'd moved from centre to standoff, that was the year when I remember playing for them, and the Huddersfield scout approached me after that. And then obviously I'd found out, I got the letter through that I'd been selected for Yorkshire camp that year as well.
Yeah, and did Kirklees have it every year, or did you have like a gap year? Yeah, every year.
Yeah, so every year all the way up until under-16s. So
yeah,
I think it was David Waite, if you remember him. He was a Great Britain coach. Yeah. He was the guy who put that performance pathway together, and that's the one that I came through.
Right, mate. So when Huddersfield come and speak to you, mate, how does that work? So had you played a Yorkshire game, or had you played like a town game, like a service area game?
It was a service area game. So I just finished playing. So you'd play five games for your service area, and then the Yorkshire scouts would come watch and they'd pick the best 40 players. And at the end of the five games, the Huddersfield Giants scout approached me, and my parents and the coach, he was a guy called Stuart Sheard, and said, obviously, we know Michael's a Huddersfield lad, we know he's from Newsom Panthers, and we'd like to offer him a two-year scholarship deal to take him through till he's 16, to see if he's good enough to make our academy side. And yeah, I was over the moon, to be fair. I got assigned that pretty quick after that, and got handed a load of Huddersfield Giants gear, and yeah, I was pretty happy with my new
scrolling around. Conor McGregor in scale.
Pretty much.
So, and what people will forget, mate, is social media weren't that big for us, was it? Growing up, so you'd have had like the letters, the landline, which kids won't really understand, will they?
100%, yeah, that's it. There was the paper. So at that stage, I was getting in the paper a fair bit. So I've still got a scrapbook of all my cutouts, pretty much, because my mum used to cut them all out. And still to this day, so for some of the big things, I still cut stuff out of the paper. I still buy the paper now. I've got that habit.
It's class, that.
Cut out the big things. Yeah, the last time I did it was actually just last year when I left Huddersfield. There was a big thing on the front page of the local paper for me to say, but just thank you for my service to the club. So yeah, I've cut that one out, and that'll go in my scrapbook as well.
That's class, that, mate. And again, like when we used to go on the internet, it was dial up, your landline was on.
Beeping and that. And, yeah, I do remember that. But yeah, nothing for me, to be fair. Yeah, and growing up, it was literally local paper. If you made that, that's how you'd find out about stuff, or word of mouth.
No, to be honest, mate, sometimes you think it's probably the best way, innit?
100%, yeah. There's a lot of distractions on the internet now, to be fair. And yeah, obviously being in the professional game, it can be tough at times.
Right, now, since we're on the chat of scrapbooks and that, mate, what you like with memorabilia? Do you keep that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I like to keep a lot of my things, to be fair. I've got pretty much all my trophies from when I was like 7 year old.
Players playing it under nine.
And I remember once I got a decent story with my wedding, and it was the day after my wedding, and all my mates around just play rugby with me, all my team. And to be fair, on my wedding day, I spent that much time talking that you don't really have a proper beer at your wedding day. You spend your time talking to guests and all that kind of stuff. But then the second day we had like a party for for the kids because there were no kids at the wedding. I had a pretty good drink that day and I was home early in bed. But little did I know, everyone had come back to my house for a party and they'd gone through the garage where I kept all my trophies in these boxes. And the lads have seen that I've got under six trophies and they've put up all over my house. They were in my fridge, they were everywhere. That's and I got hammered next day. They were like, you get trophies just for turning up at trying to get these. But no, yeah, I've not given any of them away, to be fair. I've got some old memorabilia, but I've got some good stuff as well, to be fair. I took a
lot. You remember, mate? I just got a big vision of the Richie Rich vault and all, like, you're going to win up trophies and that.
Oh, there is literally certificates from under sevens and under
That's brilliant, that.
Yeah, don't throw nothing away, to be fair. They're all up in the attic now in boxes, to be fair. You never know, kids might look it up one day. I think, what is this?
That's brilliant. So when you walk in that environment, mate, how was you in new environments? Was you someone that settled quickly or
in?
So do you know when you walk in scholarship environment or you went into your Yorkshire and your national camps? Yeah. How was you when you first went into camp?
It was tough, to be fair, because I was the only guy from Huddersfield, to be fair. One other mate, a guy called Richard Lopak, that were from like the Huddersfield Giants club, to be fair, scholarship. So there were two of us really, and we just kind of stuck together. The majority came from the big four at the time, which were Leeds, Bradford, Saints and Wigan. And the majority of the kids that were going to the national camps and the Yorkshire camps were from those areas. There wasn't many Huddersfield Giants or Huddersfield-based players. You got a lot from Cass and Hull and places like that, the real rugby-dominant places. So, yeah, no, it was tough. But as I got the second year round when I'd made the squad, so the second year round was easier because I knew all the faces. And it's once you're in the system, they know about you. So they watch you then and you're kind of in, really. It's just breaking down that first door and getting in. So once I'd broken at 18, kind of stayed in that system until I was about 18 year old, to be fair. So once you break in at 14, you stay in there.
So that's like Liam Farrell, is it Gary Wheeler? And
yes, so they were all like my age group. So Liam Farrell, Gary Wheeler, Joe Westerman, all those players, Tom Briscoe, Paul McShane, they were all my age. Yeah, so no, we had really, really talented side.
Yeah, I was nowhere near the Puma stuff, never mind that national stuff, mate. No, well, the thing is, you'll know about them now, but the likes of Blackbrook and Wigan St Pat's were like your bigger clubs up there, weren't they? So Blackbrook were Saints feeder team, Pat's were Wigan's, but without being too disrespectful to other clubs, that's just the route, isn't it?
Yeah, and there'd have been
the clubs like up your way that were like that.
Definitely.
So, yeah. And then, how many games do you play when you're in national camp, mate?
Yeah, so for national, so obviously Yorkshire first, you'd play the sort of take the best 40 players and Lancashire take the best 40 players. And then there'd be a Cumbrian camp as well. Same thing again, Cumbria, best 40 players. And then from that, they'd pick 20. And then you'd play a three-way tournament. So you'd play Cumbria and you'd play Lancashire. And they'd do the same. And then from those games, they picked 40 players again, and they would go to national camp, and then obviously from that, they picked the best 20 players to play against Wales, and that's kind of how it went. And then we played against Wales, and then the year after, the same thing happened, but the game was against France that year.
Right, and is they still up playing at six, mate?
I was still at six, still playing six all the way, all the way till I got to the academy. I stayed as a standoff.
Right. So when you're in scholarship, mate, and you're in that environment and professionalism's becoming the new form of life for you.
Yeah.
What little sacrifices would have to be took back then for you?
Oh, it's my, just literally I was training pretty much almost every day, to be honest. So I train with scholarship on a Monday and Wednesday evening, and then on a Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday, Thursday, I'd train with News and Panthers. And then on a Sunday, I'd play with News and Panthers as well. So it was on a Friday and Saturday that I was getting off. So I was pretty much doing sport 5 days a week. pretty much. So it was pretty full on, to be fair. But at that stage, it was fine for me. I literally threw everything into it, and I loved it. Couldn't do enough of it, to be fair. It wasn't till you get probably the year after, when you're about 15, 16, that's when you start after making some sacrifices, when you can't go to your mates' parties and stuff like that because you've got training and all that kind of stuff. So, but to be fair, myself, I didn't really miss it. I enjoyed it. Most of my mates were rugby players at that time. So everybody I knew was playing rugby, to be fair. I didn't really have a massive group of mates that didn't play rugby. To be fair, so we was all kind of in it together.
Yeah, and when you're going through that, mate, what was the feedback like from Huddersfield on the scholar terms? Were they pretty efficient with letting you know what they expect from you and that?
Yeah, definitely. They were good, to be fair. They came round, they always used to come down to the big amateur games, and obviously they'd watch me whilst I was playing at Yorkshire and stuff like that, and they'd say that obviously the first team coach at the time, Tony Smith's keeping an eye on everything and all that kind of stuff, and just making sure my development was going really well, and developing into a player that they could potentially put onto an academy contract eventually. That was the plan, and obviously they saw something in me at 14 years old, and it worked out okay.
How did you deal with the extra? Was it self-pressure more than pressure of a scout? Did you cope with that sort of attention well?
So self-pressure was massive. To be fair, I put a lot on it because I'd set goals for myself. So as soon as I got the scholarship, my goal was, right, I need to get an academy contract, because if I get an academy contract, I can get into that system then, and then try and work my way into the first team. And then at the start of that, my final year at Newsham, I broke my ankle in the first game of the season, and I was absolutely devastated. I had to have surgery and have it pinned and plated, and I was pretty depressed, to be fair, for, say, about a month, because I thought it was over. I thought, this is my final year, it's under 16s, I need to have a big year, and I'm not going to get a contract. I was still with the scholarship, so they were doing my rehab and stuff like that. They was helping me, giving me physio and things like that on my ankle to make sure it was healing well, but yeah, no, I was absolutely devastated at the time when that happened. I came back and I played the last six games of the season, I'd say, including the playoffs, semi-final and final. So I only played six games in my final, yeah.
And does the goal change when an injury like that comes along?
It does, and it did for 4 weeks. The fourth week into having my cast on for 6 weeks, I got a letter through the post to say, we'd like to invite you down to the stadium because we're going to offer you an academy contract. So quickly switched, and I'll never forget that, because I remember being on crutches at the time when the letter came through with the Huddersfield Giants badge on, and I was like, I remember I actually signed my first academy contract on crutches. I had my tracksuit on with three other lads from the scholarship. I've got that cut out. I'm in the paper with my crutches, smiling at the front of the stadium, signing my academy contract. So, it was great news, to be fair, at that time. And the deal was done pretty early, to be fair. So I think they must have seen enough to know that they wanted to offer us contracts for the year after.
Yeah, and also, does that change your perspective on yourself as well as the club? Because they put a bit of faith in you.
We did at that time. I think my confidence from being a 14-year-old to 16-year-olds had just literally skyrocketed. It just skyrocketed just in my own ability. And everything was just, I was working extremely hard in training and doing so much extras. I used to go to the field all the time. I was obsessed, to be fair, and I'd be working on my game constantly. And then my confidence levels just went through the roof, because I was just like, right, that's it, academy contract now. This is the next goal. I want to make Yorkshire Academy. So once I got into Academy, like, the next goal was right, I want to make Yorkshire Academy and go from there, and then hopefully try and make the England Academy team and go from there.
Well, it's mad to think that just that little influx from Daz has proper switched your mentality to personal game.
100%.
And so when you've ticked that box, you're not hesitating onto the next all the time, aren't you?
I was constantly, that's, and I'm still like that to this day, to be fair. My mind never stops going. I'm constantly looking at what's next, what's the next goal, what do I need to achieve, what do I need to improve. But no, I do look back.
Have you allowed yourself? Yeah, sorry, go on, mate.
No, I say I do look back now, and I'm still very, very good mates with Daz. And yeah, he pretty much changed my life really at that age, because I like to. But I do think back and I think what would rugby have looked like for me and life would look like for me if he did not took over at that club at that time. So
yeah,
I'm grateful for
it's probably a question for well beyond, but while it's in my head now, mate, is did you ever give yourself time to enjoy the present and the moment?
I don't know, to be fair. I think I'm not too sure I did.
Probably me mithering you then,
I look back and I'm really proud with what I achieved. But like I said, at that time, it was just happening so fast. It just seemed like it was one thing after another. But one thing I do know is that I was playing rugby really well, really confident, and I was very happy, definitely.
Yeah. And before the ankle injury come, mate, how had you been with injuries?
Nothing. That was my first big one, and I've had a lot through my career. So that was the first. That was the first operation of many, many.
Right. So do you think, because you've got the first one out the way, and not only was it your first injury, it was quite significant.
Yeah.
And you've learned the resilience to get over that and what it takes. Do you think that's helped you?
Probably not at that age, because I didn't really go through a proper rehab process. It was kind of just rest and leave it, and then hopefully when it feels good, come back. My first one when I as a professional player, that one really hit me. And then from there I've had a fair few, which we can get into later.
So when that next target set, mate, is everything around education that getting to being a rugby player, have you decided that pretty early on? And then once the scholarship and academy come round, that's that.
No, not at all, to be fair. Pretty young. Makes me laugh, to be honest. My dad was constantly on to me saying, rugby's not real. He's not a sporting person. He was like, you need to focus on schoolwork. You need to focus on your schoolwork. You need to do well in school and you need to think about what job you're going to do and things like that. So that was drilled into me from, like I said, as soon as I was in high school. So always alongside my amateur rugby, it was constantly drilling into me, you need to be doing well at school, you need to be doing well at school. So I always focused on my schoolwork, and I knew that if I didn't make it as a rugby player, I wanted to be a PE teacher because I loved sport. And I really got on well with the PE teachers at school, and it was my favourite lesson. And it was just what I wanted to do. So alongside my rugby, all my GCSEs, I was focused on doing really well in my GCSEs and getting onto a sporting course at college, to be fair. It was funny because my dad never really paid attention with my rugby until that year that I made England, and he was like, oh, he's actually all right. He's actually all right, yeah. And it's funny now because literally when we see people and that, it like, took him all over. We went all
I've got his under six trophies at all.
No, he didn't. he did from when he realised when I started playing really well at a high level. But before that, it was my mum. She'd be the one dragging me all over the place. But no, they're both as proud as punch now, to be fair. But it does make me laugh when I hear him tell stories now about how much he did earlier. And I was like, you want to tell me.
Didn't see you. You know, it's mad, isn't it? Because, like, obviously, I've not reached your levels and that, but my dad was the same, I think, you know. Yeah. It's like, as if when you get older, it's like, that's when he circulated around certain games. So, you know, like, your bigger games and stuff.
Yeah, that's what it was, exactly that, same thing, yeah.
So, when climbing the ladder through the club, are other clubs able to have a chat with you, or were you not interested anyway?
I wasn't interested, and I probably didn't have the means to do it anyways. So my mum never drove, as I said, growing up. So I'd rely on lifts to get to everywhere, to get to everywhere, or the bus, to be honest. So luckily there was, like I said, played in a really successful team at Newham Panthers. So there were four or five of us from that same club on scholarship, and every week I'd just hop in someone's car for away games and things like that with my mum. And obviously I was in walking distance for training and things like that and home games, so it was fine. So obviously I was getting lifts to like these camps or to what do you call it. So I owe a lot to the parents and my teammates because they got me around the place, to be fair. Like I said, so I was never really approached by anyone else. And to be fair, I had no interest in playing for anyone other than Huddersfield. From, like I said, about 2001, so I'm from 11-year-old, I used to go down to pretty much all the Huddersfield Giants games to watch with my best mate. So I had no interest of leaving the club, to be honest.
Yeah, and if the Huddersfield opportunity wouldn't have come around, would you have kept playing anyway, mate, and just combined it with hopefully a PE teaching role or something along them lines?
Yeah, definitely. That's what I was working towards. And yeah, like I said, if it had not come round, I'd have probably looked at all the clubs at that stage if they were available. But I love the game, so I'd have definitely kept playing rugby. I'm sure of that.
So you mentioned earlier you played the last six games, and a couple of them last six games were real big, weren't they?
Yeah.
So how do you force yourself back into the side mentally and physically and able to play in them big moments after such a big injury?
Mentally it was tough, to be fair. Coming back, I was very nervous about my ankle. I think I came back a little bit early, to be honest, but I wanted to play. I knew we were travelling really well and we had some playoff games to play. We had to beat West Bowling, who were from Bradford, in the semi-final of the Yorkshire League. And then we ended up playing West Hull in the final at the Boulevard. That was my last ever amateur game, to be fair. But no, yeah, mentally it was tough to come back. But kind of built in confidence as the games went along, to be fair. And that's kind of one thing I've noticed with any injury, which put me in good stead over your career. The first game when you come back and then first few sessions are a bit shaky, but as soon as your confidence grows in the injury, the more you play, and soon enough you forget about it when you're out there in the action.
So I suppose with the position you've played throughout your career, really, you don't often get a choice, but I'll ask it anyway. And was you someone that needed an early touch or an early involvement?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I get really nervous before games. I still do now, to be honest. Even though I played a lot of games, I still get very nervous before. I do the same routine before every game. I'm very diligent about what I do. It's changed from when I was a young kid, from an amateur to being a pro. But as soon as I've been in the pro game, I'd say consistently now for probably the last, I'd say, 13 years, I've done the same thing from probably being 20-year-old. Yeah, just the way I prepare.
Does it just feel like it's gone in, like, from being an academy lad to, like, a Bradford now like that?
It feels like it's gone so quick. So quick. Literally. And I remember talking to the lads that were 30-plus when I was 17 and I'd played my first few games for Huddersfield in the first team, and they said it goes just like that. And yeah, it's gone so fast, and now I'm in the last 2-3 years of my career now. It's gone quick. It's been a whirlwind, but I've got
five or six years.
Oh, I wish. No, I don't know if I'm too happy with that.
So when them games come along, mate, is it just about sticking to the basics and finding your way back into the game?
That's it, yeah, definitely. Getting an early touch, getting involved, and not trying to do too much, but don't try to protect it, to be honest. Just go out there and get a hit, get a tackle. And once you do that, your confidence will just grow because you'll tackle someone, you'll be like, actually, I'm all right here. And then that's it, you're into the game then. You can try to do, and obviously give it time. Make sure you've done all the rehab and you're fully healed. My advice would be not to come back early from injuries, because I've done that at professional level and you just end up doing either the same thing again or something different. So yeah, make sure you complete your rehab and then just get stuck in nice and early, and your confidence will grow.
So how did that game at the Boulevard go, mate?
Oh, so the final game for Newsham, it was a final, and we ended up losing. It was a real tight game. We lost 8-4. Yeah, 8-4. Right. It was only two tries in the game, a try apiece. And then they kicked a goal. We missed our goal, to be fair. So it was what do you call it? It was 6-4 to them for a fair while, and they kicked a penalty towards the end. It was a tough loss. I actually scored the try for us, so it was nice to play my final game for Newsom and get over the whitewash. Because I remember my sister, she was at university at Hull at the time, so she came to watch. My mum came over because she wanted to see my last ever game for Newsom. So yeah, it was an emotional day, but yeah, I remember because I'd played with those lads since I was 7 years old. So yeah, as you know, when you look back at your amateur days, they're some of the best days playing with your schoolmates week in, week out. So yeah, no, I do cherish those moments. It was just a shame we couldn't have lifted the trophy to finish off, but we'd won plenty of trophies before that, to be fair. So yeah. No, it was good.
So the next stage, mate, do you go straight into a sort of pre-season and stuff then?
So we kind of, the season finished in like March because we were still playing through the winter then. And then, I pretty much had 4 weeks pre-season time with Huddersfield Giants Academy before the season was about to start for them. And their season kind of married up with Super League. So we played through the summer. So yeah, finished at like end of March, and the academy season was starting at the back end of April. To be fair, so I went straight down. We used to train on Leeds Road. We're coached by a guy called Wayne Stead and Andy Proctor. And there's some very, very, very good players down there. Obviously, I met my best mate, Leroy. He was down there. He's obviously a couple of years older than me. So he was in the academy at the time. Trying to think if there's any other first teamers that were in the academy at that time. No, there wouldn't have been, to be fair. But yeah, Leroy was down there, and that's when I first met Leroy. He's a very good mate of mine. He's godparents to my children, to be fair. And he was from Newsom. He was a few years older than me, and he went to school with me. But because he's obviously a few years older, we never really spoke at school. But once we got into the academy, we started travelling together. And then that's when we come a little bit closer. But yeah, no, it was good. Straight into the pre-season, and we got ready for my first academy game, which was against Salford at the Willows. To be fair,
so you played the Willows.
Yeah, against Salford at the Willows, and I was really excited. They put me on the wing for my first game, and it was a curtain raiser. So I don't know if you remember, but obviously we used to play before the first team game, and I remember coming out for the second half, and I'd never played in front of more than probably 50 to 100 people before. So we came out for the second half, and obviously Huddersfield Giants playing Salford first team at the Willows, and you don't know if you remember, but it's a pretty intimidating place when you played at the first team. And I remember coming out, and in the second half there were booing us and all sorts, and it was my first ever academy game, and I'd say about 4,000 or 5,000 in there in the second half when we were coming out. And it was loud. And it was a real experience for me, to be fair. No, we got a good win. I think we won about 20-10 or 20-12 or something like that. So, but I loved it. I loved it. I absolutely loved the atmosphere. My first time playing in like a proper stadium and things like that. So no, I really enjoyed it. And wearing the proper Huddersfield Giants kit, that was something really special. I remember looking at my shirt and thinking this is a step up. So no, it was a good moment.
And you've been on the wing as well, mate, hitting the cage when you're running out and stuff.
Oh, the red cage, yeah. No, I do remember it. And I played left wing as well, so I was right in front of that stand getting hammered.
Oh, brilliant. So, is, like you said before, the personal goals don't stop. You're still doing them now. So that first game, boxes tick. Yeah. What was the ambition that year, mate? Was it just to establish yourself anywhere in the team?
Pretty much. So it was to nail a spot down in the team. So I played my first two games on the wing, and then he moved me to stand off after that, because that's what I'd always been. So I played my first two games on the wing, and then he moved me to stand off. And I played the rest of the year at stand off that first year. So I was only 16 going 17 then. No, I'd just gone 16 that year. Yeah, I was just leaving school. I'd just gone 16. Yeah. Just gone 16 that year, and I played standoff for the majority of the season. We missed out on the playoffs, finished mid-table, and I ended up winning Rookie of the Year. that year for in my first season for the Huddersfield Giants Academy. And then my second year, I was 16 going 17. And then that year, I knew it was a big year. I wanted to make the what they call it, the academy side. So I wanted to make Yorkshire Academy. That was the next goal for me. So I was like, right, I want to make Yorkshire Academy and try and make that step up that second year. So that was the next goal that I set for myself.
Right, so that first year, right, going from being in a very competitive Newsham side and floating between pro and... If you're that good, you probably could have competed at semi-pro at Newsome, I'm guessing, mate. Yeah. So flipping between them two standards, did you notice a level change?
Oh, massively. Massively. Yeah. The detail, the size. So that's when I first started lifting weights and stuff when I went into the academy. So the schedule. So started training. We used to train Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then play. Oh, no, sorry. We trained Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then play on a Saturday. Saturday afternoons, majority of the games were. And yeah, just the training, the intensity of training, it had gone up. The level of player was better. And obviously playing with people that were 2 years above you. So it was under it. So it was junior and senior academy at that time. So I'd be playing with the junior roles when I was 16, pretty much. Yeah, so it was different. It was different, but it was a step up again. And I embraced it, and obviously I set new challenges for myself and things that I wanted to achieve. But that first year, I just wanted to nail a spot down in the Huddersfield team. I did that. I had a good first year. I wouldn't say my impact was as big. It was good. I settled in pretty young. And to be fair, they were really happy with me because I was 16 years old and I was holding my own against 18-year-olds, to be fair. So I think that's all I needed to do that first year. The second year, I really wanted to kick on. I was like, right, I want to be a star of this team now and try to push on into the first team. So the second year, I really set goals for myself. That was the beginning of 2007. That would have been.
Yeah, and did them goals get achieved, mate? And did you really hold your own again and set standards again?
Yeah, so that year, I ended up scoring 30 tries for the academy. And I played for Yorkshire Academy. I played centre for Yorkshire Academy. John Bastian at the time. I think he's back at Leeds now. He's been head of youth at many different professional clubs. Made me captain. So I captained Yorkshire Academy against Lancashire. We played a two-game Origin series. We lost against Lancashire away, but we beat them at Leeds. And then from there, I got picked to play for England Combined Youth, they were called, which was the under-17s team. And we played against Australian Institute of Sport, and we beat them in two test matches, one at the Halliwell Jones in Warrington, and we played one game at Wakefield, and we beat them 2 weeks in a row, which was good. And then at the end, and then the back end of that season, well, in the summer, so I was at college at that time. And in between college, I wasn't working. I was just either in the academy or I was going to college. And when college finished in like July, they'd noticed that I'd been playing really well for the academy, and I'd captained Yorkshire at this point. So John Sharp, who was the first team head coach at this point, invited me down to training. So he said, "Oh, would you like to train with the first team?" I was like, "I'd love to." Absolutely loved to. So through the summer holidays, I'd go training with the first team down on Leeds Road. Obviously, I still wasn't on a first team contract at that time. I was still on an academy contract, and I'd been training really well. So, like, again, my confidence had just gone through the roof. Obviously, I'd just been selected for Yorkshire, just been made captain, and I get invited down to train with the first team. So I'm like, this is going really well. I must be doing something right. And I've been training for them for about a month, and the first team going through really bad period with injuries and results, to be fair. And then it gets to August bank holiday weekend. And I remember obviously Academy didn't have no game, to be fair. So I had a big August bank holiday Sunday night, massive, to be fair. Had a real good time. And then on the what they call it, on the Monday, I get a phone call saying, oh, can you come down to training? And I'm pretty dusty, but it's the first team, so I'm like, yep, I'll be there, to be fair. And trained really well, to be honest. And then after the session, he came up to me and he said, there's a chance you could play on Friday. He goes, we've lost both centres last week. Chris Nero at the time and a guy called Jamal Olise were both injured. Yeah. And he goes, there's a good chance you'll be playing. We're going to put you in the squad, so be ready. You think you'll have a spot for you on the bench on Friday? And it turns out, yeah, I did. I got on the bench against Warrington away and ended up making my Huddersfield Giants debut whilst on the new contract. Yeah, I wasn't signed to the first team yet at that time.
Should have went on the piss a bit more often, mate.
I know.
Bet you were gutted that one.
They were both me and Leroy. They got invited down to training next day. We were like, oh, wow.
So, do you know when you were growing up, mate? Did you captain sides often? Or as you've got older, has the leadership role become something you're more accustomed to?
I think it was just as I got older. I think as I was younger, I've always been very, very professional and always wanted to do the right things and always been willing to learn. And I think that's something coaches have seen in me rather than that I seen in myself until I got older. But from a young age, I always did the right things. I was always in time for training, always worked hard, always willing to learn. I've never really been a person to mess about and I've always tried my best in everything I've done. And I think that's something that coaches admired. So I've always been in like leadership groups or in and around captaincies growing up, to be fair. And then obviously as my career's developed, I've kind of developed that leadership role.
So when you make your debut, mate, and you're coming off the bench at the Halliwell Jones, which at the time, it's a very modern stadium as well. So you've gone from playing at the Boulevard and the Willows.
Yeah.
So somewhere like the Halliwell. Is that when does a young lad grow a set and go, listen, like I'm here and I'm on the fringes. I've more than established myself. You're winning rookie of the year, you're captaining county, you're captaining academies, you're playing a key role now, and your versatility starting to show as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how did you manage that whole situation?
I don't really know. It kind of just, like I said, it was just a bit of a whirlwind. Everything happened really quick. It was just like, I was just getting invited to different training session after training session after training session. And I think the qualities that I've got of being really hardworking, that's something that my parents installed in me from being young, my dad especially, with to work very hard at whatever you do. Make sure you're on time and make sure you work hard and you try your best because you don't get nowhere in life without hard work. And, like I said, that first game, that Warrington game, being sat on the bench, I was petrified. I was sat there shaking for about 78 minutes, pretty much. And I remember the academy had played before, and they were all in the stands. And every time I'd go to warm up, they were cheering and all that kind of stuff. I could hear them shouting, to be fair. And then, it was on Sky Sports and everything at the time. I remember seeing Eddie and Steve-O before the game and seeing my name flash up on the big screen and stuff. And like, I'm only 17 at this time, and my best mate had had like a big party down at his house, and my mum and all his family and a lot of my brothers and sisters had gone down to their house to watch the game. And it's 78th minute, I get a pat on my shoulder saying, you're up, go on, get on. And I remember running down that sideline, and to be fair, I remember Ben Cooper, he was the trainer at the time at Huddersfield, and he just goes, just get a touch, like that. So I didn't know what tackle it was. I just ran on, and Ryan Hudson, who was the hooker, I just pushed him out of the way and just did a scoop, picked it up and scooted. And I remember seeing Adrian Morley and Benny Westwood lining me up. And I think I slipped. I don't know if I slipped or I kind of flung myself but I slipped and they both went flying over the top of me. Pretty much. Then I played the ball, and Chris Foreman kicked it down the other end, and then there were a couple of tackles. The final hooter went, and the only thing I could think was that Super League's easy. I took one carry, made no tackles, and I was like, this is not too bad, to be fair. And we won the game, and that was my first taste of professional rugby. It was class, to be fair. All the boys were great with me, to be fair, being so young and making my debut as a 17-year-old. And I remember after the game, Robbie Paul was playing at Huddersfield at the time, and obviously at that time, they got off the bus and I was stood outside the stadium phoning a taxi on my phone because I had no car at the time. And he was like, oh, don't worry, hop in with me, I'll give you a lift home. So obviously Robbie Paul's a massive star and got his convertible and he drove me to my mate Max's house where all the family were, and he came inside and said how well I did and all that kind of stuff. And my mum was there kissing him on the cheek and that, so I can have a picture of all this kind of stuff. And I got really fond memories of it, to be fair.
Yeah.
It was a day I'll never forget, to be fair, which was good. So yeah, I got a few minutes off the bench. But like I said, after that, that was in the August, at the end of the academy season, obviously I got selected for England and played against the Institute of Sport. And then, shortly, not long after that, I signed a professional contract in the December for the first team then, and did my first full pre-season with the first team then at the end of
2 months. That's a mad few months, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, it was like 2 months. I made my debut, played for England under-17s, and then signed a full-time contract.
No wonder you don't get a chance to enjoy it, really, or like not enjoy it, like appreciate it,
it doesn't stop. You're just constantly, what's next, what's next, what's next, what have I got to do now? It doesn't stop. It's not till you look back and do things like this that you appreciate what you've done.
I'd love to see your like super imposed, you know, sky thing where they turn around and you're like that. Brilliant. I wish you'd had a picture of that. How funny would that be?
I had a lot more hair back then because I think they were still doing, yeah, they did. They still did the slow-mos out of the changing room back then. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah,
pretty much so. Yeah, I do remember watching all that.
No, it's mad. It's mad because you've grew up loving the game.
Yeah.
Sky's evolved, hasn't it? Rugby league's evolving.
Yeah.
And like the shift in content changes.
Yeah.
And you're just in the beginning of that, but we've grew up watching the old school, like Tartate song, or however it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The 8-piece balls and all that, mate. Yeah. That was what we were all after, weren't we?
That was it,
Yeah. So when the England shout comes along, mate, do you appreciate how big that is? Especially because a lot of them Aussie school boys really kick on and achieve, don't they, over there?
Yeah.
It's a big scout.
Yeah, so that was the year after. So the Institute of Sport was, I knew that's just like the what do you call it? That's like one area. It's like one area of Australia. I think it's like just Sydney or something like that. But then the year after, obviously, I was in the first team. And I knew this was me. So after I signed that contract, I knew coming up in 2008 that there was going to be an England Academy tour to Australia. So that was the next goal I set for myself. The goal I set for myself was, in the first team now, I've got first team contract for 3 years. I want to make my full debut. So I want to make my full debut and start again for Huddersfield. And I want to get on that plane to Australia because I know I'm still under 18. I'm 17 years old. Technically, I'm in the final year of junior academy, but I never played academy again after that. And I played a lot of senior academy, but not junior academy. And I wanted to get on the plane to Australia in August, which I ended up doing. I ended up getting selected to go to Australia. And the Easter Monday game, I made my full debut against St. Helens at home for Huddersfield. I played centre opposite Matt Gidley at the time.
Easy job.
Yeah, went really well. We had a great game and we won 18-16. So yeah, it was a massive day, to be fair. And I actually went on to play 14 games that year for the first team. So I played 14 games of Super League from April till it would have been, when did I leave? I left like first week in August to go to Australia for 4 weeks.
You smashed it there then, didn't you?
Yeah, which was class. So I played 14 games and then went to Australia. We went to Brisbane, Townsville and the Gold Coast. We spent this time and it was class. We played against the Australian schoolboys. They had probably one of the best teams they've ever had. Pretty much, I think all of the teams either played NRL or playing in the NRL now still. to this day, and we played Brisbane Broncos under 20s as well. Yeah, so we beat Brisbane Broncos under 20s 22-20. So that was the warm-up game, so we knew it was going to be tough. If we only beat them by 2 points. Then we played the schoolboys up in Townsville, right in the north of Australia, and we got battered. I think it was like 56-6, but it was the heat. The heat up there was ridiculous. I think it was like 30-odd degrees when we were playing the game. And the guys, we struggled. And then the week after, we played them back down in Brisbane. It was a lot cooler, and we only lost, I think it was 16-12 that day. So it was a lot better performance, players, to be fair. But no, it was a great tour, memories and mates for life off the back of that.
So do you know when you're under the sticks, mate, and you feel like that's where you're spending a fair bit of the time, especially as a young lad, how do you stay in the game? How do you keep your head on the ultimate goal, really, when things are going tough?
When they're going wrong in that England game. You think, England game. I think we spoke a lot about what it means, what it meant, what you're representing, to be fair. I remember before the kickoff, everyone was just, I remember saying, if you're not up for this, there's nothing you can be up for. There's no need to try fire people up. We're representing this country. And that was a lot of the talk in the changing rooms. It was like, nobody needs no motivation. We don't get no bigger than this. Do you know what I mean? There's no higher level we can go to at our age. This is as big as it gets, really. So, yeah, I think that were a lot of the talk that was going on when we were doing it tough in that first game, to be fair.
Yeah, and going back a little bit, but when you first walk into a match day and your name's on the back of that jersey that you're holding such high regard, is that like does that proper slap you in the face, mate?
That's a massive achievement. That you kind of just pick it up and look at it and you're like, this is big. This is everything that I've been working for, pretty much from being 7 years old and picking up that first ball to having your name on the back of a shirt. It's a massive deal, and it's something that you take great pride in. Definitely early in your career. One thing that does happen, which is bad, which you've kind of like snapped out of as you get older, is you lose it and you kind of take it for granted a little bit. It becomes normal.
Yeah.
And then as you come towards the back end of your career, you start appreciating it again because you know it's going to stop soon. Do you know what I mean? So when you first start, you really appreciate it and the excitement is really there. And then through that 20 to 30 probably period, you start to take it a little bit for granted as it's just week in, week out, this is what's normal. And then once you hit 30 and you realise, right, I'm coming towards the back, you start to savour everything a little bit more then.
Imagine when you're in the grind, it's just your job, isn't it? You're constantly rolling.
You're just walking up to work every day, you're walking up to work every week, you're just doing your job. You don't really take time to think that, oh, I'm playing in front of 10,000 people today. It just becomes the normal. Do you know what I mean? Just like, I'm playing on Sky on a Friday night on TV and everybody's coming to watch me. It just becomes normal. And then later down the line, you look back and you think, actually, this is not normal. Not everybody gets to do this. So you start to appreciate it a bit more again.
And a similar question, really, but do you know when you see that first top in the crowd with your name on?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, say like, because we've all done it, waited outside changes for autographs and that.
Yeah.
When they turn the jersey down, maybe, and it's like Lawrence or whatever.
Yeah.
How is that bizarre?
Yeah, that's a massive feeling. Yeah, the weirdest one for me was when people first started asking me for my autograph because I didn't have one. I'd not practiced one. I knew
you were going to say that.
The one more than the shirt. It was the autographs. That was the one for me. But that first year, I actually went home and I had to practice one. I had to make one that was quick and better than just writing my name in block capitals and ruining people's shirt. Pretty much so. I actually had to practice my autograph because like you said, there'd be fans waiting outside stadiums with books full of pictures of myself and other players, and that was the one for me. That was strange and took some getting used to.
But it was, mate. So you're in the thick of things now, and you're becoming from a boy to a man, aren't you? And
yeah.
just one of the things, was it ever close to leaving Huddersfield? Or were the talks nice and easy and negotiations were short and sweet and done and dusted?
So from the age of 17, when I signed that first contract, within 1 year, I'd renewed that contract. When I was 18, I signed a 5-year deal. And to be honest, until the age of 29, I never got to the final year of a contract. They never let me. I was never off contract. So I never had the opportunity to leave unless someone was going to pay for me and buy me. So I think I'd get to like 2 or 3 years left on my contract and they'd be like, we want to extend your contract. So I never got to a position to negotiate with others until I was 29. But I had no ambition to negotiate with others, really, to be fair. I was always very happy. I was always playing every single week. We were very successful for the first half of my career, to be fair. I had no passion to leave the club, to be fair, at any stage.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're going to hit them moments now, mate, because not only has you seen Huddersfield evolve and regenerate, and you've seen the game change, roles have changed since we've grew up, haven't they? And all that type of thing, mate. And it's like Barry said the other week, it's not that the game's changed, it's just styles become popular again, don't they? They come back round, a bit like Clubber, really. Clothes become back in fashion, just like style of play does. So when did you firstly notice the style of the game changing? And secondly, when did you notice Huddersfield becoming a force?
So the style of game probably changed. So I'd say from my academy time, so when I first joined the academy till probably 2010, so I'd say probably a 3 or 4 year period, the game was pretty open still, very attacking based and very fluid. And then I'd say probably around 2010, the game changed because I'd say a few Australian coaches that had came over to Super League. Michael Maguire probably being the biggest one at Wigan.
He
was massive into wrestling and the ruck area was big. It was big in Australia and he kind of brought it up. Everything always comes over to Super League slowly, but probably a few months after. And he brought that over to Wigan at that time. And we had a coach called Nathan Brown as well. And so he's come from Australia. And he brought it over to us as well. And I feel like that really changed the game then. It really changed the game. The way teams defended and the style of play became more from score as many points as you can to pressure and ruck control. And I feel that's the way the game's gone and that's the way the game's played now.
Very structured, isn't it?
Very structured. I remember... Yeah. I never really used to hear too much about completion rates and things like that when I was first coming through. More about scoring points at any opportunity that you could. But like I said, started to hear a lot about my completion rates and structure and attacking shapes and all this kind of stuff. And the wrestle, winning the ruck, all that kind of stuff. That all started to come into the game around that period there. So when I was around, I'd say 20 years old. Early 20s, I noticed a real change in the game, to be fair.
Yeah. And because when we were growing up, mate, your 13 was a career bar in the likes of Scully and Farrell, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were the exceptions, weren't they? Without being rude to anybody, they were just an extra middle. That's your fullback was a solid, solid under the eyeball, made the last
ditch. That's it, make his tackle.
Jim Edlinski on it. And then obviously, I can't pinpoint you like that one person that changed it, but your 13 become your middle 6 and 7, didn't it? And split the pitch up into them thirds and stuff. The game definitely changed when we hit our early 20s, didn't it?
Yeah.
So when did Huddersfield become the top, you know, like we mentioned before, the big four? Do you feel you've become a big danger to that?
Yeah. I think we broke in probably 2009 when Nathan Brown first came to Huddersfield. So it was my second full year with the first team, to be fair. So my first year, 2008, we weren't very successful. We finished 10th, but it helped me because obviously struggling team. I was a young lad at the time, so they thought there was no relegation that year because they just brought in the Super League licensing system. So they threw me in, and it kind of benefited me because they could blood me. I could play lots of games without the fear of me messing up, and it was great for my development and getting to play lots of first team rugby. Obviously Nathan Brown had seen that, and he'd seen the potential that I had only being 17 going 18 years old. So that next year he took a real shining to me and worked a lot of my game in the pre-season. And yeah, when he first came over that first season, we was really successful. We finished third in the league off the back of finishing 10th the year before. We got into the playoffs for the first time for a fair few years, and we got to Challenge Cup final at Wembley, which we unfortunately lost against Warrington. But I was 18th man that day. But at the time, being a 19-year-old, at the time, getting to warm up on Wembley pitch and being in part of that occasion was something that was massive, absolutely massive. So, yeah, really enjoyed that day.
Yeah, and while we're on that, mate, I ask most people this, and it's not just an ordinary week that week, is it? I know you've got to say the media handbook stuff and the cliched stuff, but it's not, especially for a young lad. How was it for you that week?
Yeah, at that time it was pretty surreal. So obviously only being my second year in the first team, obviously going to Wembley, and I remember it was red hot, and I remember we're left up at Huddersfield, and there were all these fans clapping us off on the bus, and we went down and we stayed at a place called Pennyhill Park. And obviously, like I said, didn't have much money growing up. This was like a 5-star hotel with pools and spas. And me and Leroy are looking around going, what was pool out? We're like, what is this? This is
keeping that dressing gown.
It was ridiculous. Absolute. And I roomed with Kevin Brown, I remember. And obviously, I was only a young lad, so I wasn't on a massive contract at the time. And I remember being starving. And I ordered, there was no prices on the room service list, so I just ordered some a sandwich and some crisps on room service. I thought, oh, that would be no more than like a tenner. And it came through, and it was £28. Kev had to lend me money and pay for it. It was ridiculous for a sandwich in this hotel. But no, it was a great experience. And obviously, I remember rolling up to Wembley for the first time and seeing, I think there were about 60,000 fans there, to be fair, that day. And the noise when I first went out to warm up, it just went woof, and it really does hit you. And to be fair, at that time, I was like, I wish I was playing. I understood, because I remember a few weeks before I had the tough conversation with Nathan Brown that he was going to go with experience. Jamal Alisi and Paul Fatawira had both played for New Zealand at the time, and they got picked in the centres, and I was under 19, and I was like, fair enough, being a 19-year-old, I like, my chance will come round again. Well, I know it would take us a long time to get back, but I really enjoyed that experience at that stage. And we had a massive party after in the Hilton Hotel, which my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, came down to, and we made good use of the free food and drink that was on offer.
You did after that. So do you know much about Pennyhill, mate?
So I knew that it was the rugby, is it England Rugby Union's training base?
Yeah,
it's a great spot. Yeah, it's a very nice spot.
Yeah, no wonder it was 28 quid, innit?
Yeah, I know, for a sandwich.
So, again, you know, with you being young, did you expect a lot more of them days to come on more often?
That's exactly it. So I thought my second year, we've got to Wembley, it must be normal. This must be the normal to get to finals. My second full-time season, I thought, got to Challenge Cup final, oh, it'd be fine. I'll play next year when we get back, or the year after. To get back to an actual final, I've been back to one as part of a squad member, as 18th man again, which was last year, as a 32-year-old. So it took us 12 years to get back to a final. In between then, I've lost one Challenge Cup and three. So I've lost four semi-finals. So I've lost the Challenge Cup semi-final. We lost a playoff semi-final in 2010 against St. Helens. That was one game away from Old Trafford at Knowsley Road. That was the last ever game at Knowsley Road. Then in 2012, we lost against Warrington in a Challenge Cup semi-final. to go back to Wembley. Then in 2013, we lost against Warrington in the playoff semi-final at Halliwell Jones to go to the grand final. That was the year we won the League Leaders' Shield.
Yeah.
We missed out then. And then in 2015, we lost to Wigan at the DW Stadium in a playoff semi-final to go to Old Trafford. So like I said, I could have played in potentially three Challenge Cup finals and three grand finals, but
yeah,
it's a tough spot.
It is, and it also justifies them long-term contracts out of this field, because you're definitely knocking on the door, aren't you? Like, them games are sometimes one or two players away, one play away, aren't they?
Yeah, it's that close.
It's
that
fine close. Margins.
That first one against St. Helens, I scored two tries that game, and we were leading going into the last 10 minutes. And then Kieran Cunningham came back on. It was his last year at St. Helens, and he scored two late tries to get them to the grand final in 2011. But yeah, no, it was disappointing. Disappointing to say the least, but it is what it is. That's rugby league.
That's it, mate. And when you're around them big nights, and in the back of your mind, when you're establishing yourself at this point at centre, aren't you, mate? And you've adapted to that role now. And is it international call-up summit? You'd have the box ready to beat it.
Yeah, definitely. So at the start of the 2012 season, Steve McNamara came in during pre-season, and he said they were looking to establish something called the England Knights. So it was a pathway for players that they saw potentially being England first team players. So he came in and pitched the idea to everyone, and then he said after the first six rounds of Super League, he'll be announcing this squad, which was virtually an under-23s squad kind of thing, really, to be fair. And I was selected. I was selected to play for the England, to go to the first training camp, actually, sorry. It was a training camp first. I think they picked about 30 players. Then we went down to Loughborough, and we had like a little mini weekend camp down at Loughborough training. And then he said, at the end of the year, we'll be playing in the European Cup against Ireland and Scotland. So Ireland in Belfast and Scotland in Edinburgh. And luckily enough, at the end of the season, I was selected to play for the England Knights against Ireland and Scotland. And that was my first taste of senior level international rugby league. To be fair, and then luckily enough, the year after it was the 2013 World Cup, and the England Knights was around again, and we played Samoa in what was their warm up game for the World Cup that year, and had some real good results, and I won every single game that I played for the England Knights, and I loved my chance playing with them. To be fair, and I played some really good rugby for them. Never did quite kick on up to the first team.
Right. So when did the prospect of the Jamaica side come around? Has that been something that's long been in the pipeline? Or
yeah, so pretty much I'd been asked to play for Jamaica all throughout my career, but up until the age of probably, I reckon, 27, I was adamant that I still wanted to make the England first team, to be fair. But it was getting harder and harder because of the move of position at centre.
Yeah.
Well, there was less competition, and then they moved me into the Paul Anderson moved me into the back row first and foremost, back row 13. And then looking at the top squad players playing in the back row at that time, we were spoiled for choice, to be fair, as an England team at that time with back rowers. Yeah. There was people like Gareth Ellis and Ben Westwood and real Sam Burgess and real superstars of the game playing in the back row. So that kind of blocked that pathway, really, to be fair, to kick on into the first team as a forward, because that's somewhere that England have never really lacked any kind of depth, and it's always been a strong area of the England team, to be honest. So so when I was probably 27, 28, I suggested the idea for playing for Jamaica to my current coaches that were at Huddersfield at the time, which were in 2007, it was Rick Stone. In 2008, it was Simon Wolford. 2018 and 2017, it was Simon Wolford. And both times, because it was in pre-season, the America's Cup, which were they just never let me go because they won't want me to miss pre-season training. So it was kind of poor, really, because it was kind of a lack of respect. Because I know if it was England or Australia or New Zealand, players would have been released and allowed to go. But because it was Jamaica, saw it a little bit as a joke, which looking back was pretty disrespectful. So I was never allowed to go play until 2019, because in 2018, Jamaica managed to qualify. They won the America's Cup and they qualified for the 2021 World Cup. So when I said in 2019 that I'm playing, they actually respected it because I'm going to play in a World Cup. They granted me the release to go play that year.
I think it's mad how you have to sort of like, I'm not saying you begged Mike by no means, but you've sort of had to persuade them, haven't you?
Pretty much, yeah. Started out to persuade them to release me because the last thing they wanted me to do was get injured playing for Jamaica, pretty much. And then, because at the end of the day, Jamaica don't pay my wages. That's what they used to say. They used to say, they don't pay your wages, we do. But it's the same for players that play for any other country. But yeah, no, I think it took them earning that respect within the rugby league game and qualifying for a major tournament to actually say, oh no, this is actually legit. And yeah, I was allowed to go represent then.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, mate, you're probably the same for a lot of other lads, wasn't it? It's them doing that to open the door for you established
massively,
players to go and play.
100%. Yeah, it is. That's exactly what they've done. They'd led the platform before. A lot of hard work had gone into Jamaica to where they got to be fair.
Yeah, and how was it, mate? Was it a good experience?
The World Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, class, absolutely class. Yeah, one of the best of my career, to be fair. Especially that New Zealand game, getting to face the hacker in person and playing against superstars of the NRL. Something I'll never forget.
Brilliant, mate. And obviously, you've done an awful lot at Huddersfield, and it'll be no disrespect to Bradford, but that's forever what you're going to be attached to, isn't it? Because of how well you've done and the people you come through. They somehow kept the good nucleus of yours, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you're seeing it through. So when a testimonial comes around, mate, is that something you're really proud of?
Yeah, massively. That was a big factor in when towards the of staying at the club. I wanted to achieve a testimonial at my hometown club. And yeah, it was something I'm really proud of, to be fair. I had a great year, to be fair. I put on a lot of events for the fans and the people I know, my mates, and having the game and walking out with my daughter in my arms were a very special moment. But yeah, no, I love my testimonial year. We had a lot of fun that year.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. And when the time comes to lead Huddersfield, what were the options? What was you looking for, mate, by Bradford?
So after last year, 2022, I'd only played like 13 games. It was the first year of my career where I'd not played 20 plus games in a season, to be fair. And it was very, very tough. The major one was missing out on the cup final for me, to be fair. So to be at the club as long as I've been there, like 15, 16 years, to get to the cup final, well, the semi-final first. It was the semi-final when I knew I was going to miss the final. And I was 18th man for the semi-final. So I knew then that if we won, the team wouldn't change unless drastic injuries. So, to put as much effort as I've into that club and miss that trip back to Tottenham and not be on the field and after watch that game, that was probably the toughest thing I've ever been through in rugby league, to not be out there. And then after that, there were a few injuries picked up in the final. I got through that. There were a few injuries picked up in the final and played about four games after that. And we'd won every single one. Then I cracked my ribs. I broke my ribs. And I rushed back from that injury after about a couple of weeks. And I played in France with really sore ribs. I didn't have the best game, to be fair. We lost by a point against Catalan. And I came in again on the Monday and my name wasn't on the team sheet. So at this point, I've been in and out all season, in and out, in and out. Missed the first six games, just not getting selected because they won the first six. So, it's something I've not been used to, and it was pretty frustrating. But at that stage, I had a conversation with Watto. Really good few hours, really honest. I was like, what does the future hold for me next year? where do you see me in the team? Do you see me in your starting 17? And he was really honest with me. He goes, I've got a lot of respect for you for everything you've done for the club and you've done for me since I've been here. And he goes, obviously, I want you to be part of my squad. I want you to stay. I think you're great for the players and the environment. I just don't see you in my first choice 17. I want to start pushing a few of these younger forwards on into the first team now. So your Matty Englishes, your Owen Trouts, your Ollie Wilsons.
Yeah.
I want to start giving them boys some more game time. He goes, I want you in the squad, like, but you won't be in my first choice 17. And to be fair, he could have lied to me and he could have said, you'll be in the team, you just have to work hard and keep your head down. But him saying that to me, being honest with me, he was like, I said, sweet, knowing that, and obviously off the back of this year, I know now that playing's what makes me happy. It's not the results. So we could win every game all year long. But if I only play 10 of those games out of 30, and I don't play in any of the big ones, it's not enjoyable. Obviously, I'm happy for my teammates and I'm happy for the club, but for myself, I'm not getting it. I don't enjoy watching and not playing. Yeah. I want to be out there. I want to be in action. That's why I work so hard in training. That's why I put my body through. You put your body through too much not to get the enjoyment of playing the game as well. So it was at that point that I realised that next year I need to change my environment, take some control back over my own destiny and being able to play every week and go from there. And to be fair, so it was middle of July last year when I first started looking around and putting the feelers out for rugby away from Huddersfield next year.
Yeah.
And at first, spoke to a fair few Super League clubs. But the thing was, I still had another year left on my contract at Huddersfield. So I still had a year to run. It was there was a lot of Super League interest from Salford. There was Hawkeye, there was Lee, who were very interested all along, and Wakefield. But all these clubs wanted Huddersfield to contribute towards my wages as well. And Huddersfield, obviously, understandably, were not going to contribute towards competitors, as they see it. But Bradford were a consistent. They popped up straight away, to be fair. And I've always liked Bradford, to be fair. It was a club, like I said, when we were growing up, they were the best team in the world, to be fair, at one stage. And I chose to play my testimonial game against Bradford because I really admired the club and everything they'd done. And they were a constant throughout, but I was always pretty set my sights on wanting to play in, what do you call it, wanting to play in Super League. So it gets towards, obviously, the end of the season. And it's the week before the playoffs. And we play Wakefield in his last home game. And I knew that, obviously, Watto was going to rest all the boys that he wanted to play in the playoff game against Salford on the weekend. I knew I was playing for Huddersfield that Friday night. And in my head, and Watto's, and maybe a few other staff members that might have known, and my close mates, Leroy and Jermaine, that was going to be my last game for Huddersfield in my head. In my head, I was never going to pull on another Huddersfield shirt again, to be fair. So I wanted to make sure I had a good game that night, and I played pretty much all the game. And it went to extra time, and we won in extra time, to be fair. And it was just a good feeling to know that I'd won in my last game, the last time I ever played an Huddersfield shirt. And I made sure to stay out and thank all the fans. Little did they know that it was my last game, but I knew myself that I'm just going to take my time to say my goodbyes. Most of my family came down to watch, and that was that, really. And then the week after, obviously, we had a shocking display in the playoffs, and that was it. The season was done. But it was a pretty much, personally, it was pretty much a nightmare year for myself, really. It was really tough. But as a team, it was pretty successful and a step forward from the year before. But then I went to the World Cup. But just before the World Cup, Wakefield, the last two Super League clubs, so Wakefield and Lee, went pretty quiet once they realised the numbers that we was talking about. And I went to the World Cup. I thought, I'll just focus on the World Cup and I'll deal with this after. And the World Cup was class. I got my love for the game back, really, again, the enjoyment, because didn't enjoy last year, but I really enjoyed the World Cup. And then coming off the back of the World Cup, I was adamant. Watto rung me, to be fair, a few days after, and was like, is anything sorted? Yeah, I goes, with my agent, but nothing's done as of yet, to be honest. But I'm hoping to have something sorted in the next few days. And then I spoke to my agent and he goes, the Bradford thing's still there, to be fair. He goes, they're really keen for you there. Brian Noble wants to meet you. He goes, I goes, fair enough, but yeah, I'll have a chat with him. So I met Brian Noble and he really sold the club. He spoke about how, obviously, he was so excited for me to join the club. They wanted to rebuild the culture of the club because it wasn't where it needed to be the year before. He goes, we brought all these new players in, that signed Jack Walker and Bodine Thompson, and they had great players there like Jordan Lilly and people like that, and they really wanted to make a real thing of it this year, and they got some good young players there as well, and he really sold the club to me, and he was like, we want to have you in the leadership group and make you captain. And to be fair, Huddersfield, Richard and Nigel Wood, they have a great relationship with each other. And they managed to come to an agreement with the finances. And he goes, I think the best thing to do is to send you on for this first year, a season-long loan, and then the second year we'll offer you a contract. So I ended up signing a two-year deal. So the first year is a season-long loan. So Huddersfield are just kind of carrying on my contract for this first year, and then next year Bradford will take over. And I ended up signing a two-year deal just after the World Cup. So it all happened pretty quick in that time. And the news came out. And yeah, pretty much, as you say, we used to have papers and stuff. My social media all went crazy. And my phone didn't stop blowing up all night.
So Nobby, you'll call me from Captain Kicker. Number six.
Pretty much.
Going back to the old school.
Pretty much, yeah.
You've had some big results, mate. I think, yeah. So what would be the ultimate ambition for us?
For Bradford?
Yeah.
This year, obviously, the two massive goals. One would be to get to Wembley and play in the 1895 Cup. That's a massive target. I think, obviously, it'd be very special to play there. To be fair, with Bradford have not been to Wembley since, I think, 97. So it'd be huge for the club to get back to Wembley and play in a final. And for myself personally, having been twice and not actually played but warmed up, to get there and be able to pull on a shirt and actually to run on the field would be huge. And also the Super League, like I say, the club, the history of the club, the massive, they've got a massive fan base, and it'd be good to get that club back to where it belongs, because I feel it's massive for the game and Super League. And that's the aim. That's the ultimate goal, really, to be fair, to get Bradford Bulls back to where they belong. And I believe at the start of any season, if your goal is not to win the competition, you shouldn't really be out there playing the game. So yeah, that's our goal. Our goal is to go out there, win every game, and do as best we can.
Mate, and obviously the new job's been announced, isn't it? Where you're going. So is that, was one eye with Bradford on setting the platform for the future as well, and how will it be juggling that?
Yeah, so that's something that came to fruition. That was all, I was always, so back in 2017, I had a big knee injury, to be fair. I had a big knee injury in 2017, and I missed the majority of probably two-thirds of the season that year. I only played about six games in 2017 with this knee injury. And it was at that point my player welfare manager said, do you fancy doing, like, what are you going to do with all this time you've got off injured? How about, is there any education you're interested in? Anything you want to do? And when I first started, when I first broke into the first team, I'd just finished college at the time. And I was like, oh, I want to focus on my rugby. I don't want to go to university. He goes, so any courses you want to do at uni? I goes, I've always wanted to be a PE teacher, to be honest. That was the goal from being very young. So maybe doing, it was like, have you got your A-levels? I goes, yeah, I completed college. I've got my A-levels. He goes, oh, switch. You could sign up to any course. So I did a sports coaching degree at Leeds Beckett University. And that took me, did 4 years to complete that. And then I've been currently on my PGC. So after that, I was like, I want to get my teaching qualification, and hopefully when rugby league finishes, going to teaching. But then obviously what happened with Bradford happened last year, and I was like, this is kind of perfect timing, really. And it was another factor in the decision, to go, because I was like, I could probably make dropping down and going to part-time environment where you train in an evening. So we'll train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and players' games on a weekend. But they're all, you train from pretty much 4 p.m. till 8 p.m. on a night. You can, what they call it, can work during the day. So I was like, this is going to tie in really nicely, to be fair, and kind of get my foot in the door for when I do, when time does come to hang up the boots, that I can just go full time and step into teaching. Whereas if you stay in Super League, it's kind of a bit more harsh and a bit more abrupt, as one day you're there playing full time rugby and the next day you've got no job, to be fair, and there's no real transition, to be fair. So it's a lot tougher.
Yeah, life happens for a reason, mate, and that obviously was the reason for that happening, wasn't it?
Definitely.
Right. So a few daft questions for you, mate.
No worries.
So any pre-match superstitions, mate?
Pre-match superstitions. Not so much superstitions, but I do get like ready a certain way. Yeah, so it has to be shorts, socks. No, shorts, ankle strapped, socks, boots, wrist strapped, and then shirt has to go on last. Yeah, shirt goes on very last thing. Yeah, but I have to do everything in a certain order. And ankles have to, sorry. No, the weirdest one is I have to strap my left ankle before my right ankle. If they make the mistake, I'd have to take it off and do it again.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, it's very weird.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I do left ankle first every time.
Right, mate. So the definition of this next word's different for everybody, mate. But yep. The toughest player you played with and against?
Toughest player with, I would say, toughest player I played with would be Luke Robinson. Luke Robinson. Very, very, very tough. Very small in stature, but very, very tough. Probably being knocked out more times than I can remember. He's played with some ridiculous injuries. He's got a metal hip now, which is probably because he was so tough when he actually played the game. But yeah, I'd say Robbo's up there with one of the toughest players I've played with. And against, I would say Adrian Morley. He was tough. Very, very tough. Yeah. We had some... We went through a period at Huddersfield where we couldn't beat Warrington. We lost to him 11 times in a row in the space of like 2 years. And I remember he was part of that team, to be fair. And very, 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 very tough guy to play against.
Unit, mate. Yeah. So your favourite away ground that you've played at?
Favourite away ground? Ooh, it's a tie, to be fair. I don't know. I'd say... I'd have to say Headingley, to be fair. I'd say Headingley.
Really popular one, Headingley,
yeah. Yeah, I was going to say Headingley. Headingley's really good, to be fair, when it's full. I do love playing at the KC, but it's only good if the crowd, if there's a good crowd in there, the KC is class. But I'd say Headingley. Headingley probably just pips it.
Yeah. Prefer the new ones, mate, yeah.
Pardon?
Prefer the newer stadium.
Yeah, I do prefer the newer grounds, to be fair. The what they call it. The old ones are good, but the fields at the newer ones are a lot better, to be fair. Obviously, the ones the grounds where football's played, you get a real fast track. You find that the older grounds, your Castleford's and your Wakefield's at the grounds, it's a lot heavier and it's a bit more old school. It's a bit tighter in the changing rooms.
So, say you're out with the lads, mate, and you've had a few beers, the microphone comes in your hand, what are you going to give us on the karaoke?
Three Little Birds, Bob Marley. Or Shaggy, it wasn't me, but that's my best mate. But yeah, they're me two go-tos, to be fair. I'm not shy on karaoke, I love a bit of karaoke, to be fair.
So if you could go back to a younger you, mate, what would you tell yourself from what you've learned so far?
I would say just to don't take it for granted. Don't take it for granted because it goes so quick. Just don't take it for granted and savour everything that happens. Savour everything a little bit more.
Yeah. And I understand if you don't want to, mate, if you're still playing, but if you're willing to, a 1 to 13 that you played?
Ooh, so far, I would say my number one would be Brett Hodgson. He was class, absolutely class. he pretty much, when he came to the Huddersfield Club with Nathan Brown, he pretty much turned the club around, changed the culture, and obviously went on to win Man of Steel in his first year at the club. Big part in getting to Wembley back in 09. My wingers would be Jermaine McGilvery and David Hodgson. Both class, to be fair. Both. Jermaine obviously has gone on to represent England numerous times and win best winger in the world. And David Hodgson was a class winger at Huddersfield, and it was great for my development as a centre and a winger. My first few years at Huddersfield, he'd play outside me a fair few times, and he'd talk to me and help me through the games. He was a big part of my development. Centres, I'd say Leroy. Obviously, he was a club legend, Leroy Cudjoe. Was class, probably the best right centre I've ever played with. And obviously, played for England for a fair few years early in his career. And then the left centre, I would say it's a close one, very close. It's either between Paul Fatawira or Ricky Latella, to be fair. They were both class, both New Zealand. Well, Ricky's Samoan. Fats was a New Zealander, but both class centres. Probably just tip it to Ricky, probably, over Fats. But yeah, I'd say Ricky Latella. Then in the halves, you'd have to go Danny Brough at Scunthorpe, club legend, obviously, and a lot of the success at Huddersfield all those years from 2010 to 2015. He was involved in, and obviously played a major role in us winning the league Leaders' Shield in 2013 when he won the Man of Steel. My standoff, would have to say Kevin Brown. He was a big part in that time as well, and obviously went on to play for England and won trophies and almost won the World Cup with England back in 2017. So I'd say Kevin Brown and Danny Brough in the halves. And then the pack, I would go Earl, who was a club legend, Earl Crabtree. And I'd say Chris Hill is coming. And ever since he's been at the club these past 2 years, he's been absolutely class, to be fair. Absolutely class. He's one of those players I've played against all my career, and I've not actually appreciated how good he is until you play with him and you see what he does week out. I'd say Hillian Earl up front. Hooker, I'd say it's a close one. I go with Sean Lunt. Sean Lunt was class when I was at the club, and obviously again played a big part in the success we had during that time. I was going to toss it up between him and Danny Levi, but I think Sean Lunt was there a bit longer and he was a bit more consistent for us. In the back row, I would go with Dave Failongo. It was class. Dave Failongo played for New Zealand and Samoa. I mean, I'd go Chris McQueen. Since he's been at the club, he's been outstanding, to be fair, to still be doing what he's doing at 36-year-old every week. Class player and great block. And then loose forward, I would go with Luke O'Donnell because he was just an absolute animal when he came over from the North Queensland Cowboys. Very, very good player. So, yeah, that would be my 13 at now. There's a lot of close calls there with players that I've had to leave out, but I'd say that's roundabouts where it would be.
You've been listening to Trot the Egging. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter at Trot the Egging and Instagram at Trot_the_egg_in.